the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the Event Center, Horseshoe, Las Vegas. A very good Sunday, race fans. Happy to have you with us for day three, semifinal consolation tournament as well. But it's the top 78 that we are most concerned with, because that 78 is going to distill down to 10 final table participants, maybe 9 final table participants.
Or 8.
Because who else?
Here,
grab a microphone. In the background, you can hear the faint echo of Paul Sherman. Good morning.
Actually, the person in second, or in second, also was
Paul Callia. Paul Callia.
Right. And the other, someone else was in like fifth and sixth.
The Stephen Wells, I mean, I want to talk about your entry, Paul Sherman joining us, one of the best, the Hall of Famer. Stephen Wells playing the two entries identically, Paul. It's like a new, it's like the Eagles with the tush push. It's a new innovation.
You and I actually talked about this last year when we were with Fornatel, that I was anti, I'm anti two entries, and if I got two entries this year, I was going to play them identical. And this is the reason. How many people split the tickets? People complain, oh, I got 150 on one, 140 on the other.
Yep.
And I went entry this year and did very well.
I brought you up specifically, actually, yesterday, I think, on that topic.
Right.
About Roger Satina, another guy who vowed that he was not going to play two tickets ever again.
Right. Right.
For that reason.
You play them the same. Play them the same. So, I used to think it would be more boring to just have one ticket, but it's not. It's really, you're really thinking about it a lot more, and you're really picking your best pick, and then you're not going back and forth.
And isn't there enough mental challenges and pressures and extraneous noise to filter out? Why would you want to add that extra set of pressures to your
I'm exhausted as it is.
Exactly, right? Unbelievable. Paul, talk a little bit about your 2 days to get into the position you are.
Well, I'll tell you, I pride myself on the reason I think I do well in these tournaments in NHC is because I have shortcuts and I have my own way of handicapping large number of races, large number of horses in a short period of time. So, I'm like an expert in optional races, I think, because I can pick it. When my angles line up, then it's a play. And when I have 80 races to choose from a day, there's more likely that I'll have some of those angles lining up in those plays. So on Friday, I hit four mandatories and a place in the afternoon. Not just one place in my afternoon races. On yesterday, three mandatories. So I did not hit one winner with an optional all weekend.
Wow.
Well, yeah. Right.
That's got to be the most unusual path to today
that you've ever had. It was really. I didn't realize it last the other night. I went, wait a minute. I just hit the mandatories. A 6-1, a 10-1, a 13-1, all the 9-1, all the big
all the prices, all the good prices.
But I had not one optional head that I won. Not one. At one place.
Wow.
Also, day one, I had ended up with $107 in 19th place. After day two, I collected $107 and still at 19th place. So it's fun. And here's another angle for you that might work out, it might not. I just played the 1-9 shot at Gulfstream, which moved me up 7 spots from 24th.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, 24th to 18th to 17th. If I had a lot of plays to make. If I was certain about a lot of plays, 10 plays, I wouldn't have played it because it would be replacing one of my better picks. But I'm still looking for two or three more plays, particularly 1-9, when people are $3 apart and I'm collecting $4.20. So now I'm in, what am I in?
Right this second. This has got you in 22nd.
22nd.
Well, I was with 217. You're $17 out of tap 10.
What do I have now? Two seventeen. 217. Right. Right. So I would have had 213. And what 213 have been?
Let me refresh.
Whoop.
Sorry, that was bad. 213 is going to be no actual change at the top of the board. In a second, we got a 2-1 shot. 27.
Right.
So you moved up five.
Yeah, about five spots. Whether it'll make a difference later on.
Let's see what we got here. 9-5 favorite.
Right. So I'll move, whether I'm moving 30th to 25th or 12th to 8th, it could make a difference.
Exactly.
And if I'd liked a lot of plays later on, I wouldn't have done that. But
you didn't see it.
I didn't like today at all. It's very, very chalky today. I have plays later on. I actually put in a lot of my late plays because the races are like 2 minutes apart at the end. So I put in four of my last five plays and left one play open for the last Gulfstream race. And we'll see.
Having that option at the end, and of course yesterday, one of the most fascinating end game races, a full field at Golden
Gate
of maidens, and some board volatility that absolutely flummoxed people. I understand from the office, from Keith Chamblin, only two people made it into the top 78 despite the 8-1 winner.
Right.
And it was a horse that actually came up in price.
Well, we were looking at it and it was 7-2, and then we got sidetracked by the first or the 12 horse on the outside. And then it was 8-1? Shocked.
That's exactly
the same
what
thing
happened.
The day before. There was the last race, a nine to one shot. It was a mandatory. A horse that should have been 3-1. I was playing it no matter what, and all of a sudden I looked at it, 9-1. Usually it's the other way around. Usually it's into the gate at 12-1, out of the gate at 4-1.
One of the interesting points was, and Ben Bacek explained it, because Ben missed by dollars, dollar and change, a couple dollars. The Jonathan Wong favorite and the two.
Right.
They were about the same in the will pays for the double. So everybody thought that the two was going to come down, and when it was hovering at 9-2, they looked elsewhere, and by the time they put him in the gate, it was his first pick was the two, and he ends up getting off a horse that would have gotten him into the 70s. It is a little maniacal, and we've talked about this now for years. We are at an acute spot with the computer assisted wagering. Whether it's in the contests
or just regular
every day,
right? You play a horse that's you think is going to be 8, 9, 10 to 1, and it's 3, 4, 5 to 1. It makes a difference in everything. Everything.
This performance by our leader, Dr. Francis Bustani.
Phenomenal.
Bidding to become the first wire-to-wire winner since Jose Arias.
Tough. It's tough. And a lot of good players behind him.
A
lot of good players behind him.
Big time, including you.
Yeah, and when you have somebody... Now, I don't know if you've talked to the gentleman who's got the two...
Not yet, no.
At some point, he's going to split his tickets.
Right.
At some point, he's got to split his tickets.
Does he, or
does it go for first and second?
Well, does he take the two tickets and then start to manipulate them at the final table?
I think he has to.
Right?
I think he has to.
That's
the smart move.
Is that the end game?
But, you know, that should be the end game.
Right now, the top five, six, seven, actually the whole top, I think the whole top 10 is unchanged since last night. Dr. Bustani did get a little something. He's at 301, is it 30, Yeah, I guess it is. 301.50.
Right.
And so he's extended the lead by just $3. So he took a short price something.
Or he got a place.
A placement, yeah. That exactly. But the spread, what do you make of the spread from 238.80 to the 301?
It's when you have 700 entries in a tournament, you know, people ask me, the scores go higher? The scores don't go higher. The scores just get compact, which is why, you know, I'm $10 out of 10th, and they're probably 30 people $10 behind me. So, you know, it becomes, that's why a short price horse you take. It's interesting. It's a lot of strategy involved.
Has there been anything about the March date that you have found any different?
I think it's fine. I think it's. I'll tell you, my son is getting married in a week, so I'm going, and he lives in New Orleans. So I'm going from here to home to New Orleans, and fortunately, they didn't make the tournament that week. Otherwise, I would have to miss his wedding. Yeah, so
hey now. I love that. That's so great.
Yeah, so I'm going from here, go home, pick up my wife, and fly down to New Orleans.
Excellent. I just came from the HBPA. We were there. That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
What are the arrangements? Where are they?
They're getting married in a Felicity Church, and so it's like. It's not a New York or Chicago wedding. It's a New Orleans wedding. So you have the ceremony, and then you have the second line. You have the march around the block.
Outstanding.
Then you come back to eat. There's crawfish. There's all sorts of
nice
stuff. So looking forward to it.
Outstanding. What have you done here this week?
I have done nothing. I have been. I actually had little post-COVID issues from COVID like 3 months ago.
Really?
And like 3 weeks ago, I wouldn't have been here because I was still having lightheadedness.
Wow.
And I'm still getting tired. But so I told my wife, I'm going to come here. I'm going to go from here to my room and back and forth.
Yes.
My friends are bringing me dinner. So
nice.
I'm taking it easy. But I'm pretty good. I'm
you look
fine.
Good.
I have not played a slot machine. I have not rolled dice. I have not done anything. I have $0 in my pocket. I have nothing in my wallet. It's really maybe help me concentrate.
Well, I was going to say, give everybody a couple. I mean, they've heard you for years with us. Give everybody, when you talk about that intersection of your approach, give everybody your method of approaching. It doesn't have to be the contest. It can just be picking winners.
Keep it simple. And mostly I play contests. I don't play much outside. If I like something while I'm playing a contest, I'll bet it. But I use HTR.
This hasn't come up actually. It's funny you went to this direction because we had Scotty McKeever,
right.
And we had a discussion earlier. Emily Gullickson popped in on Friday talking about John's product, Optix EQ.
Right.
Explain the black. You know,
it's hard to explain HDR.
The software.
It's a computer program.
Yeah.
Basically, what I get from that is a setup of the race. I get a quick view. How many speed horses? Who's coming from behind? Who's going to be in the lead? It breaks it up. Yeah, there are half a dozen computer screens you look at. So basically, I use that to give me a quick vision of how the race is going to be set up. Then I also use thoroughgraphs, and so I use a combination of the both. I look for a horse that's coming up to a good race. I have certain angles, three to four, second of fillet off. New top, coming off a new top for a reason, and if the thoroughgraph matches up with the setup of the race, that's a play, and that's why it's pretty quick for me to do, which is again why I think I do well in these contests, because of all the races, I can quickly look through, not quickly, but yeah, look through 60, 80 races.
You and I have at least part of that in common, and I have arguments with one regular on the show in particular who feels that if you aren't taking into consideration the previous races and understanding how much influence there was the way the track was playing, that you have. I cannot be watching replays.
I do not look at replays. My brother is a replay fiend, so is some of the other people at my table. I've been a contest with a group of good, excellent handicappers, right? And they're standing there watching a race, and they're arguing about what happened in the race.
Yep.
Right? No, he didn't get it. No, he pulled up. No. What do I know? I don't look at horses because I don't know what I'm looking at. So I keep it. I don't know what I'm looking at. I have good players, but you probably know. Oh no, kidney sweat. I can't bet him. Oh, he's got
sickle hock.
Yeah, he got pace between his legs. I think that maybe run faster if I had that. And then I can't. There's 1,000 reasons to discard a horse. 1,000. Okay. I don't look at jockeys. I don't look at that trainers.
Doesn't.
I'll bet any. I'll play any jockey. I was at a tournament in Keeneland a few years ago, and I'm sitting with my brother, and there's a 12-1 shot came in, and. The announcer, and congratulations to so-and-so, his first winner ever. How about that?
That
doesn't, so it really doesn't faze me.
I'm in the same framework as you in terms of looking at, you talk about Thoroughgraph. Jerry has even made it easier to just use Thoroughgraph with the race shapes.
Yeah.
Then you mentioned 3-4. I talk all the time on the show. One of my absolute favorite is a horse that disappeared like in July of the previous year, now shows up in February, March, April. People are looking at PPs from last summer, thinking, oh, he's not fast enough. What are you talking about?
Right,
he's now a four-year-old, and now let's go look at that sire index and see that this horse might be 3 or 4 points faster now than he was last July. Right. And the horse is an overlay all the time.
And you know, people say, well, I got to give him a race. No, you don't have to give him a race.
If it's Mac Robertson,
time, it'll be a third of the odds.
Exactly.
That's where you catch prices.
Exactly.
I have to go.
All right.
Coming up.
What do you?
I don't know
what
yet.
What should we be watching for?
I don't know yet.
Nothing.
Watch. I got 4 or 5 late. And if I hit him, if I don't, then I'm still having a great time.
Paul Sherman, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
As always. Paul Sherman, you know Rich.
Yeah, sure.
Of course you know Richie.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Paul.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Looking to talk to you at about 6 o'clock.
You know, there's two angles with Paul coming into these races. If he hits his races, he's going to be in the top 10. If he doesn't hit his races, he could have a seat next to us.
Well, this is always the easiest day because the pressure is off in terms of focus. And guys that, just now that their guard is down and they can relax and talk about, their experience, talk about what might have gone right, had things gone differently. Everybody's got exactly the same, the same storyline. Here's Brian. And,
I will say this, Steve. I was just sitting here listening to you and Paul talk in generalities about handicapping and certain things that you look for. And I'm learning stuff just listening to you guys. You guys are really taking it to the next tier. And I hope the listeners out there really enjoy and appreciate the conversations that are like this.
No, because one thing we learn is that everybody's got their own, has their own approach, and that no two players go at this the same way.
Yeah, you're 100% right in that, some guys will take a shorter price and so on and that, and the other people like myself like to bomb away and so on and that. I've I played one bet today. I played a horse in...
At Laurel. You hit the horse. You hit that 12-1 shot, didn't
I hit
you?
The 12-1.
You're unbelievable.
Like, and I'll tell you what, I saw the betting on the board, and he's 3-1 early. The horse has lines on Charlestown that are lost by 15 and 18 lengths his last two starts. The trainer, I better be careful what I say on air, he wins a lot of races, suspiciously maybe I might say in that, and anyways in that. This that horse was still 4-1 with 3 minutes to post, and he backed right up because people were betting. But I knew he was a live horse, and I bet on him, and when he came to the top of the lane, he was sitting with his hands on the horse. I would have pressed my bet 10 times over. That's how sure I was he's going to win.
And won easy.
Yeah, he won easy. And I'll tell you something else. Right now at Tampa Bay, there's a horse, the 9 horse. He broke bad out of the gate last time on a turf course and that. They got Pablo Morales on him or whatever.
10-1 right now.
Yeah, he's 10-1 right now. I could see him running good here and that. I'm likely going to the window on that. He looks...
This is the 9 at Tampa?
The 9 at Tampa.
9 at Tampa, three minutes the most.
10-1. He ran in a turf race and made him special weight. He got totally left at the gate. He lost the race by 13 lengths. He was 20 lengths behind at the start, so he actually made ground from where he broke and so on and that. I think he might have a shot here.
3 minutes to post at Tampa. To give everybody a quick set as we just got started, and Paul Sherman, we had a chance to get going with Paul Sherman. I wasn't going to miss that chance. And we are about a third of the way into the semifinal. 34 races were available to the players, 10 optionals. No mandatories during the semifinal. So the 78 semifinalists, 10 plays, and they seem to have mostly been beholding their tickets. And as you heard from Paul Sherman, feels like it's a tough day based on early handicapping to find horses like this. But then again, that depends on everybody's approach. But once we get everybody playing these 10 races, we will have 10 finalists, and then we will start at 4:50 Eastern. The Oaklawn 7 will be the first of the 7 final table races.
They're not showing me the horse on the track, which I don't like in that right now. I wish they'd show the 9 horse.
So he went up a tick. He's 11 now. You can like him more.
I always like horses more. If I like a horse at 4-1 and he goes to 10-1, I like him twice as much.
Brian, give everybody your learning curve in terms of watching horses on track. And you see, a lot of times there's people that say, well, I'd rather see them in the flesh. The TV, you can't really. But you've obviously got a certain look that you like. Talk about your learning curve. And for people that don't know what they're looking at, how do they learn how to pick a horse based on paddock appearance?
My old ex, she used to go to the track. And she liked to see when she knew nothing about the races and that. And when she went to the track, she'd always look for perky horses. That's about as easy way to describe it as anything. Just a horse that looks like he feels like he's going to run that day.
Feeling good. A good feeling
energy.
But he's not washy. He's not nervous or anything. He just looks like he can run in that.
You like a horse who's on his toes and really just dancing, prancing, ready to go.
They won't show me this damn 9 horse.
You just had at Laurel again. Well, this time a 2-1. Was it the 5 win, or did the 1 come up the rail?
Well, they were showing the 5 on the gallop.
They were. Who's 10-1? That Sir Smoke of Mario Saray.
There was a 9 there. I didn't see enough of them.
Well, maybe, you know what, because I've got the TV, this TV, I got to crane my neck around the post.
The five.
I got the obstructed view.
Yes.
Yeah, the 5 must have won.
Well, the 5 did win. Sir Smoke, 10-1, and so a second $20-plus horse at Laurel. There, and here goes Brian again. He's going to go, even though he didn't get a good look at the 9, he's going to bet the 9 at Tampa.
Look at this horse. He's up to 13. He's going in the reverse direction.
But Brian said something, and Rich, in terms of betting on horse racing for dummies on your book, is that something you talk about? Because we do hear it a lot from players, from serious players, that say the higher your horse goes, I mean, neophytes think that a high price means, oh, no one likes my horse. But it's a lot of serious players, when those numbers start to tick up, they go deeper in their pocket.
Yeah, there's really two ways to look at it, Steve, and I do address it in the book. Say, for example, you think a horse should be about 5 or 6 to 1, and if the horse goes down to 7 to 2, he's kind of an underlay. But if he goes up to like 8, 9, 10 to 1, either there's two ways to look at it. Either you say he's dead on the board, or if you really like the horse and you stay with the horse, you're getting an overlay. So, you know, I don't know if there's any particular right or wrong on something like that, but it's two ways to observe the exact same scenario happening. A horse who's going off at higher odds than you think, is he dead on the board, or is he just a big overlay? So, you know, it's up to the beholder, I guess.
No doubt. One thing that has happened in the social media age that is probably very fruitful is the discussion, the wider discussion about how to bet, as opposed to just how to handicap. And especially given we didn't have an expanded discussion with Paul Sherman about the technology. Scotty McKeever will again this year join us for final table coverage with Equine Edge. The transition or the incorporation of how to bet is clearly the missing link portion of the equation. It's what we need to help neophyte players more than anything, because a lot of them have enough confidence in their opinion generation and get frustrated when it comes to applying their conclusions to a bet.
Well, there's no question that when you're starting out as a newcomer, and you know, my dummies book is for newcomers and neophytes, I really recommend at the start win place betting, exacta betting, and daily double betting. Keep it simple, just like Paul Sherman was talking about earlier with his handicapping. Keep it simple, because those are the kind of bets, quite frankly, that are easier to hit, and you can grind out a nice profit if your opinions are right. And as you grow as a horse player with your knowledge and your handicapping and your confidence, you can certainly go into multi-race and multi-horse bets when you're ready. And, you know, people are, you have to know how you are risk averse. You know, some people are real conservative, and some people are more like lottery players and willing to take a shot at it.
Well, and given that we've discussed quite a bit today, or this weekend, we've discussed quite a bit about the kinds of technology that is basically making a lot of handicapping decisions for players.
Ticket building, sure.
Then from there, that's the, you know, where do you go from here once I've got an idea of what I want to use? Let's listen in to our first race of the afternoon. It's the fifth here in Tampa. Here's Jason Beam.
My Eagle Soar is in a good spot, third, 22 seconds flat, the wind at their back for that opening quarter mile. Discreet Devil is fourth right now. It's 2.5 more back to Awesome Prince. Favorite trying to get in gear there is back fifth, about 4.5 off the lead, but is starting to wind up on the outside. They come toward the top of the stretch. More Drama cuts the corner to go to a narrow advantage. My Eagle Soars down the far outside. Here comes Awesome Prince, starting to stoke the fires. Discreet Devil in between horses. They have a final furlong left to go. Here comes Awesome Prince up on the outside. My Eagle Soars still holding on just in front. It's My Eagle Soars, Awesome Prince, Discreet Devil between them, and down on the inside, More Drama. My Eagle Soars, Awesome Prince. My Eagle Soars still just in front. My Eagle Soars, Awesome Prince. My Eagle Soars. A little bit of history there as Kathleen O'Connell becomes the all-time winningest female trainer in North America. My Eagle Soars wins it. Awesome Prince was second. Then came Discreet Devil. More drama.
6-1 winner, and was putting in a bid. It seemed Brian coming back from watching the race. The winner is a 6-1 shot, but as Jason noted, Kathleen O'Connell, we brought this up several weeks ago, was moving inexorably toward becoming the winningest female trainer in the game's history. So just a hearty congratulations to Kathleen, who, sex aside, the female, male, doesn't make a difference, is as terrific a horse person as there is.
You know, Steve, that's one of the beauties of horse racing, and the fact that as a professional sport, you do have females competing on an even level with males. So, you know, there's no, you know, like when Patty Cooksey was the winningest female jockey, then Julie Crone, and the same with the trainers like a Linda Rice or a Kathleen O'Connell. You compete mano a mano against men, and that does not happen in other professional sports.
No, it at every level. And that's what's fascinating about the game, from owner breeder through to consigner on the sales front, whatever portion of the game, jockey and trainer, owner. Mm-hmm. I mean, at every level, punditry and on-air talent and racetrack management, probably racetrack management, probably the weakest link in this front, and something we've discussed as well. We had that conversation with Dora Delgado at Symposium last year with Jessica Paquette, who has been the target of the most cruel and unfair criticism I have ever seen. And it is shocking that the people involved in ridiculing her race calling is to me is bizarre. If they think they're going to browbeat her or Philadelphia Park, they're mistaken. And I saw another round of it just this past week. It's amazing to me.
I agree with you 100%. She's a lady, and she's trying to learn the game. And yeah, she's not a top race caller, but she's trying hard and so on and that. And I remember years ago. I mean, people like to criticize people and that. I remember years ago that there was an Irish guy that had a big mouth at the. When the horses came out through the paddock, from the paddock at Woodbine and that. And I remember one day, he's yipping and yapping and that at Danny Beckin. Anyways, Danny's on the horse and that. And Danny said to him, he sort of threw the reins and he said to him, why don't you try it? And the guy shut his mouth up completely. So, you know, when you're criticizing people, I mean, it's not necessary in that. She's not a top race caller, but she's trying and she's going to learn, and I think she's going
to
be good.
You can hear improvement. She'll be the first to admit that she's got a long way to go. It was really a surprising move by Parks to hire her and give her this chance, and everybody else should give her the chance. I see things on Twitter that are just completely ridiculous.
They made similar comments to Don Lupo up in Canada.
Absolutely.
Don calls, she's called both harness racing and she's called
thoroughbred
racing and that. And people are so easy to criticize, but when you tell them that they have to do it themselves, it's a different story.
You know, who also went through that was Angela Herman
in Canterbury.
And also at the Golden
Gate.
But, you know, they're turning what should be a positive story into a negative story.
That's right.
This should be ground breaking that here's a woman with a chance to call at a, you know, not a major track, but a second tier track. It's good. You know, she calls a lot of races. She has gotten much, much better. If you listen from day one to how she's calling now, she's improving almost every day. And it's groundbreaking that she's got this opportunity. It should be a positive story. And I like you and Steve, I really think it's atrocious the way that she's being treated.
Here's David Harrison. And you can stop. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
They're getting ready for the fifth at Gulfstream. David joins us, and
hello, Steve.
David won't be a repeat champion, which is the hardest, maybe the hardest back-to-back challenge there is in all of sport.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a good run, but I didn't make the cut, and I'm in a console tournament. But I have to tell you, Steve, the pressure, I feel so relaxed today. I'm socializing, you know, meeting people, introducing myself to a bunch of former champions, people I admire. I said hello to Roger Satina, who I was wanting to chat with. So it's been, hey, it is what it is, and I can't wait for the final table.
What some thoughts about your experience yesterday and Friday?
Yeah, I started out the day on Friday not so well. My final bankroll was, I believe, $38, and I put a couple of winners together. So I got up halfway through the day about $94, $98, but you know, I just couldn't put the moderate price horses together. The horses basically weren't running. I have no regrets. I used the horses I wanted to use. They just didn't get me where I needed to go. So, but just the experience, and I think being a former, you know, a reigning champion, I felt a little pressure on Friday, because it just seemed like, you know, with all the attention, all the notoriety, I felt relaxed yesterday, had a better day, but it's just, I can't really wait for the final table, because I know the experience, how exhilarating it is for the winner, and it's just so great to be here. It really is just so great to be here. So I'll have to try to repeat next year, you know, there's always next year.
Well,
that's the boat that I'm in next year.
There you go. You, exactly, right? You can't.
I didn't even qualify this year, so.
Yeah, and you know, once you start, when I start for the 2023 tour, you start realizing how it's even difficult to qualify.
Yes,
and
it
then
is.
I'm just sometimes, even today, so I'm wandering around the ballroom. And I'm starting to think, did I really do this? It's almost impossible. And I'm like, wow, you know, it's just, you know,
yeah.
And only horse players really understand the work that goes into this. They just, a lot of people who are non-horse players, they think, oh yeah, yeah, this guy got lucky. He just, you know, basically played a lottery. And, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into this, and it's like a 3-day grind. And I was mentally exhausted last night, and I wasn't even in the, I didn't even make the semifinals. So it's a lot. Mentally it's a lot. You have to maintain your composure. You can't let a tough beat get you down.
Exactly.
It's so, and you have all this chatter and the noise around you. Yeah, it's just really, really difficult.
Another thing, you can't let a tough beat get you down, but you also can't celebrate too long when you have a winner.
That's a great point.
I've seen people playing in these tournaments and that, and they get a winner and they're still celebrating half an hour later. Well, I mean, you're not paying if you're still celebrating half an hour later and that, you're not paying attention to what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And so on.
You can't overreact to like
and
right.
If you get a bad beat in a race, you get a bad ride or something like that, and you get beat, you better just forget about it.
Right.
You just have to be oblivious to
right.
it.
Basically, you can't overreact to either a tough beat or a big, you know, cap horse.
And that's true. And don't let anybody, you know, don't think that that's limited to the contest world. It's true of your day-to-day play.
Absolutely.
And you know, you certainly can get momentum off of wins and a series of wins, and you get into a zone. But you know, the players that have the most long-term success are even-tempered and are you know, have a certain calmness about their, you know, their approach. And when you look at them, you don't know if they won or lost the last race.
Right.
Even before I started playing tournaments, the best advice I ever got was one. I used to yap at riders or yap at harness drivers and so on and that. And one day somebody said to me, Brian, he said, Do you think maybe you just picked the wrong horse?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think you just picked the wrong horse?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's no question.
That stuck with me for over 30 years now.
Yeah, there's no question the correlation between the horse players like the three of you fellas is like poker players in the World Series of Poker. Everything you talked about, David, has to go through the same mind of someone competing for $1 million prize in the World Series of Poker. If you can't go on tilt, if you lose a tough one where the card, the river card gets you, you've got to turn the page and go to the next hand. Or if you win a big
hand. Yeah, I equate it to football. You really, I'm a Giants fan, Rangers, let's go Rangers, by the way. I equate it to like the personality of an Eli Manning. You know, you didn't know whether he had a touchdown drive or he was fourth and 17. And
that's because he had the same sourpuss on his face.
Yes, exactly.
That's an Eagles fan. He's an Eagles fan.
That munched face of his.
Well, two Super Bowls, Steve. It tells a story. Demeanor is a big bet. Hey, man, those were two. Okay, I don't want to get you revved up.
He's actually become more likable doing these commercials where Peyton makes fun of him. That has made him way more likable.
Well, you don't like the aw shucks thing on the sidelines after two picks in a row and a fumble? Yeah, but hey, listen, composure in those two Super Bowl drives is what helped him down to the Patriots.
Sure.
And, you know, if somebody gets a little too revved up, and again, you've got to have the right composure and the right mental attitude for these tournaments.
Yeah, there's no question. If you lose your focus, there's another race coming right up.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That could be the race that gets you back on the right track.
Rich, it's a lot easier said than done sometimes, right?
Sure it is.
And part of the issue with me, and it took me a number of years to qualify, and I was getting frustrated. I was traveling to tournaments at Naira, Belmont, Aqueduct, Saratoga. Some years I played 9 or 10, I try to avoid the online, on location, on site tourneys, and I got to the point where I was getting frustrated. I'd be in Monmouth in December, my 12th tournament, and I felt the pressure. I want to get to the NHC.
Yep.
And you'd be in 6th or 7th place, you go all in on a horse, and you get a head bob, and you get beat by a nose, or you get a DQ, which has happened to me. I got DQ'd, and I would have been in the third slot and earned a seat at a Monmouth tournament. And so it's easier said than done. And, it gets in your head. So it's just a difficult process to get here. And when you get here, there's 793 entries. So look at it this way. Only 10% of the players make the cut. So 90% don't. And it's
that number is a tip of the iceberg kind of a scenario for what you're saying, because the 800 that got here, there's another 15,000 that we're trying to get here. So it's a smaller percentage of a smaller percentage. Dan Kovaleski is joining us, DP.
Steve, how you doing?
I'm good.
You're still pretty energetic today.
Always. It'll be the Tuesday show.
I got him all revved up when I mentioned anything about the Giants. Not that I forgot he was an Eagle fan, but Steve, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I really. That call against on that holding call, I'm sorry, that was bullshit.
It seemed like a silly time to make a call like that. Dan Kovaleski, you came here into the last chance, first chance, and you played your way in.
Yeah, in the past couple of years, I haven't had as much time to get into the, online or playing a ton of contests. So what I kind of told myself was, come in, play a few entries, see if I can get lucky. I tried it 2 years ago, didn't. And, sometimes these formats, fit my strengths as a handicapper. And, I did pretty well. I was a photo finish away from taking second place, I think, in the last Santa Anita. But, I got here, had a great time with some friends, and didn't do well in the main tournament. But, I feel pretty good about the weekend.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Talk about how you approach the game. We haven't talked in a couple of years.
Yeah. It's... a little bit of everything, a little bit of trip handicapping, a little bit of thoroughgraph. I'm trying to watch the end of the race here. No prices.
No. Well, I tell you what, the 50 to 1
Oh, hold on. Yeah.
The 50 to 1 got second.
And that's how today's been. It feels like there's been some big prices underneath, you know, one or two prices here and there, but, you know, just kind of seeing what we can pull together. It's been tough sledding, not much movement in the leaderboard.
Very little, but continue on. Oh. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, yeah, I don't even know. So what was I talking about? I was distracted.
Handicapping methods.
Oh, yeah, so a little bit of trip, you know, a lot of replays, you know, a little bit of Thorograph when I can. But I think that's what, especially on this weekend when there's so many races, you got to have all the tools that, you know, help you uncover some nuggets and whatever you can kind of find, too. So, but really watching as much as you can, taking some notes and see what happens. So.
What was your origin around the game as well? Who introduced it to, you know, to you and how'd you develop your style?
Oh, I mean, I've told the story a few times, but it's funny because it was free hot dog day at Canterbury Park in Minneapolis. That's how it got me in. Kind of just grew from there. Dollar beer nights when I was in college. And then, honestly, when I first started working, I'm a sales rep, so I'm in the car all the time, and I've got this guy on the radio, Steve. And was it JJ, the old guy?
JJ,
yeah,
Grayson.
I used to listen to both, guys, I'm serious. Yeah. And I just would, it would kill my four-hour drive or whatever you guys were doing, 3 hours. So I was like, I'd learn more. I did the website, Steve's website. I learned about Thorograph that way and just kind of learned different pieces, and there we go. So.
Dollar beers and dollar hot dogs get me every time.
Well, and frankly, I've discussed this with my own experience at big race days, most specifically Preakness, and starting in the infield with a group of, you know, mid-20 friends. I mean, when people shit on on the infield scene at Preakness, and they scoff at exotic animal and wiener dog races and dollar beer night and dollar hot dog night, they're wrong. They're just simply wrong. It whatever method gets anybody into the building is valuable. And even if it's one out of 1,000 people that came through the gate that day, they could go on to become a player, become an owner, whatever entree to the game they have, it's a winning formula. And so, you know, I sometimes make fun of the bow tie crowd and some of that stuff, the Lily Pulitzer dress stuff, but there's members of that set that are hooked on the game.
But I do have a question though, because what do you think the percentage of say 20 and 30 year olds that are in the Preakness infield that are partying, listening to music, drink, you know, are a lot of them aren't wagering, but do you think a certain, you know what I mean? It's just they're there for the event more than the horse.
There's more wagering than you realize.
Okay, all right.
Even if they're just picking numbers and because invariably the people that brought them have an interest and an established interest in the game, and that was the case with us.
Right.
And our group that brought about 40 people every year. And then the people that I've introduced the game to, there's somebody in there that likes the atmosphere, likes the game, and I can tell you from the years that I was running the barbecue, and we would be there for
Saratoga,
not just Saratoga, at Preakness in particular. There was an interesting curve because it's a big college scene with all the colleges around Baltimore, down to Delaware and into Virginia. I mean, there's a huge college scene. The freshmen were drinking right at the start of the day, and they're having fun. And then I would sort of notice, as the kids were getting a little older, the 20, 21-year-olds, they were actually, they had a beer in their hand at 11, but they were sitting in folding chairs and they were looking at the form. And they had kind of graduated to that next, you know, to that next level of interest. They wanted to have some ideas over the course of the day. They're still going to drink. Some of them might still run the porta potties, but they were interested in what was happening.
Yeah.
It's an incubator.
Right.
And you know, you this is I'm not going to say this. I will. Something crawls out of the petri dish, and it's like, you know, it's like Species, the movie Species, or like a pandemic. It spreads.
You know, Steve, I actually kind of addressed this topic in my dummies book, and basically what I wrote about was that all of us that are in the game, all four of us here and others, we have to think like Johnny Appleseed. We're like throwing seeds around. You don't know what's going to grow. But if you don't throw the seeds around, nothing's going to grow.
Exactly.
Correct. So I guess it can't hurt having these concerts and events that are... But I will tell you this. Now, I don't mean to be controversial, but when I have an opinion, I'm an opinionated guy. But I was at Belmont Stakes, I'm not sure what year, but it wasn't Triple Crown. I think it was a huge crowd, beautiful day. It was like 80 or 90,000 people, believe it or not. When I was leaving, just the debauchery in the backyard, you know, people vomiting, couldn't stand up, fights. Steve, to be honest with you, some years I don't want to go because, you know, again, but the thing is, I understand there's a concert, but there's a percentage of people who may become players, but I'm the first one to promote a sport that I love. I'd like to see this sport get more press.
Of course.
Hey, listen, when Flightline won, I was in New Hampshire on a beach vacation. I watched the Flightline race and I said, holy shit, that was some, this horse is amazing.
Yes, he is.
So all on Sports Center the next morning, on any national media, you didn't hear a thing about it. There might have been a blurb on the bottom, right? On a scroll. How do we promote a great horse like Flightline? Because Steve, if Flightline isn't in the Triple Crown, you know, they don't get much publicity. How do we do this?
Well, there's been no shortage. There's been no shortage of those horses. Wise Dan is not gonna excite the public.
But Wise Dan was no Flightline.
Wise Dan's a Hall of Fame type.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No doubt.
Those of us that are heavily involved, we enjoy all aspects of those runners.
This is a very racing thing to me. It's always focusing on what we don't have, but what we have. So when you brought up the Belmont, it hit me home because I took a busload of my friends. We had 20 cases of beer on that bus.
There you go.
And we literally, I knew horse racing. A couple of my friends did, but half our bus didn't. We introduced them to the game. We had programs made. We had, you know, they had a great time, so then we go back. And I think you take these small victories. Let me go to finish. Take those small victories, and you can, you know, cultivate. We talked about cultivating the horse players. So, you know, I may have been thrown up in the back of the bus, but, hey, we got, you know, we got new players involved.
You've seen me in public and seen me at some of these events and speeches. You know I'm the first guy who likes a party.
Yeah,
so I have nothing wrong with that. But what my point is, I'd like to see more people as horse players get into the game to make the game. Hey, listen, I love this game. I just wish it was a little more popular and got more national media attention. But I guess it is, you know.
It's a niche. It's become a niche sport.
Yep.
It's just the nature of it. And there's lots of reasons for it. It's a complex game. It requires critical thinking. It appeals to certain kinds of a mindset.
Yeah.
The more exposure we give it, the same kind of thing. You know, we can talk about planting seeds, but the concerns about and the inferiority complex element of race fans collectively is. To me, it's just silly. It's not a mindset that does anything for us. It's like we love the game. Well, then other people should like it. For somehow, there's people. I think they sense that if other people think it's weird that we like racing, it reflects on us. It's not worth worrying about. Bring as many friends and neighbors and relatives that as you can to the track, and they'll see it for what it is. I bring this up all the time. The one thing that the Jockey Club, if there's one positive that they've brought to the game in recent years, in the last 15 years,
it was that McKinsey study in 2010 that prompted them to launch that Jockey Club Tour on Fox, which ultimately became the NIRA programming. And the exposure that the game is getting, and McKinsey said, you've got to have a steady supply of racing on cable channels, on basically, you know, out there for people to run into. Not just run into it, but then see it consistently. And so all of that work has been a huge positive. I mean, there's more eyes on the game than ever. There's other challenges on the back end that include, you know, some of the betting problems that we've got with the computer groups utilizing too much of a percentage of the handle and basically siphoning value out of the pools. That's a problem that is facing existing serious players. So there, you know, there's so many parallel tracks to work on, but getting eyes on the game has been a huge win. And you know, one of the things that makes me nuts, and I haven't discussed this in ages, the stupidity, and we're dealing with it right now in New York, the morons that are fighting this loan. The thought that that New York State is giving
it's a subsidy,
NIRA,
right?
We're going to give them $500 million. Right. It's a loan that NIRA will pay back, just like the $30 million loan they paid back even ahead of schedule during the period of the franchise renewal, when they had to ask the state for $30 million, which they paid back. And yet, at the same time, you got certain people that spout that as a subsidy. It's not a subsidy. Not even politicians in Albany. You've got certain groups that are, you know, fighting and they're giving this you know, giving attendance as some sort of an indication that it's a dying sport. Here's the reality.
It's not 1965.
There's more people looking, more people attending the races than ever before. So when people say, there used to be 25,000, and now there's 3,000 at Belmont or Aqueduct, no, there's probably about 29,000 today. And then there's probably about 42,000 on a Saturday, maybe 70,000, because we're looking at it through the ADW.
Exactly.
It's a virtual attendance. There's more people visiting more racetracks than ever before in the history of the game.
Right.
And yet there's this preposterous, idiotic theme that the game is dying. No one goes. It's unbelievable that and that the industry does not have a collective response like this that I've said for years. Put virtual attendance. We know what the average handle is per person.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if there's X amount bet, if there's $9 million bet at some racetrack on a Wednesday, divided by what the average handle was, and print a virtual attendance. 33,000 bet on fairgrounds today.
Right.
And I don't give a shit that there was 800 people in the building. It means nothing. And yet, people buy into this idiotic. I mean, the stuff that's being spewed in New York is mind-boggling.
Yeah. I look at this with the subsidy and this loan, where politicians don't understand, and there's certain writers, columnists, no names mentioned in the upstate New York area, who are just They're uninformed.
Ironically,
mind-boggling.
You know, David, ironically, you know, I live here in Vegas. I've been here for 25 years, and we're going through a process now with the Oakland A's that want to move to Vegas. But you know what they're asking for from the state? They want $1 billion from the state, the county, and the city to build them a goddamn baseball stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a loan. They want the money to build that damn stadium. And now, when I listen to you guys talking about New York, and
New York State's giving a ton of money to the Buffalo Bills ownership to build that stadium.
There you go.
New stadium. but yeah, because it's just football. But yeah, no, it's frustrating.
The situation we stand now, how are you making out in the consolation?
No good. It's been a downhill. You know, I've hit the first race every day, and then I got nothing.
And then
so, you know, I'm a 5-1, 10-1 player.
I'm in the same way, but I every time I look at my horse is losing.
Well, you got a 1-2 shot get beat here at Tampa, 8-3.
Who's that horse?
8-3 at Tampa. And
I didn't bring my sheet over with me.
I got it right here.
The pressure's off, so I'm not. Who's the eight?
The eight just now. This is the second to last race at Tampa, the sixth. There was a.
Yeah, I had that race.
This was the Alligator Hunter at 18-1. So this is a big, big.
Oh, I'm done. Okay.
The Alligator Hunter, and that's what the noise was. So this is a $38 horse, probably $50 or more, when this is finally the first real shake-up
right.
horse yep. that we've had.
Right, because we had a lot of place.
Still not a cap horse. There's been zero cap horse. What was, you guys had table bets Friday and Saturday about cap horses?
Oh, yeah, there was zero total, you know, because there was one, a couple on Saturday, but they were light in the place pools because they were yep. next to big favorites.
Oh, there's been no
true $64 horses all weekend, which... It's pretty shocking.
This one is going to be close.
Eight races remaining now.
Well, I did, when I handicapped the card on Friday, I told the horse players at my table that it looks like it's going to be a grind. Mm-hmm. So at least this whole weekend, I was right about one thing. Friday was going to be a grind with not a, very few cappers. But other than that, I had no other opinion that went right.
Well, we usually say $100 a day is kind of my back of my head goal.
Yep.
But we even talked on Friday morning saying this card. These cards feel light.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
A $60 day could be a great day
right.
on Friday.
Well, and that we heard that right from the get-go. AJ, one of AJ Benton's best qualities that has enabled him to cash all four trips here is that he makes a determination before the day ever starts as to how fruitful it might be, how productive. And he said, and he did this we've talked to him every year since he came on the scene. He said on Friday, there's not a lot out there today, and I'll be happy with 9-2 shots.
Yeah, but,
and that's how he approached it and had a terrific day
since,
one.
Since AJ and I finished at the final table last year, we've become close friends. So we have a conversation every morning, and that's, we had a game plan on Friday as we, you know, share opinions, and we're both on the same wavelength. Because the way I look at it too, chatting with other people, getting their insight, getting their feedback on experienced horse players,
sure.
it really helps. Because you say, what do you think of the card? I don't think there's going to be many cappers, but somebody will say, hey, Do you see the 8th, 9th, and 10th race? I think we're going to get at least one or two caps. Then you relook at it. And again, it's all this information that we share is only be helpful.
We've got a first mover that has driven himself right. We've got two of them.
Who do we have?
We've got Joe Paese, the owner of Home Run Inn in Chicago, DP.
I know that place well.
Exactly. Paese has moved into 6th. $256. Dr. Bustani, still strong, 301. Paul Caglia chipped away a little. He's within 11. He actually had pushed back, and now he's clawed back a little. Gary Fenton is unchanged. Stephen Wells had one, looks like a place price, so both of his are still at 266. But Joe Paese bangs in at 256.30. Edward Dyke has also moved into the top 10, 255.60. And then George Novick, a story we've been tracking since Thursday, the winner of the last chance, first chance.
What?
Small horse owner, and George, 251.80, right. He's ninth.
Is he the guy who did the pick and pray?
More or less. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I saw that when I went back to the room. I'm like, that is really, you know, that's difficult to do. But there's a few guys
that do. Paul Sherman basically put his, he put eight of his 10 plays in and was saving one and had one that he was sort of, kind of a variable.
You know, and I think a part of that also is a lot of players, especially since the pandemic, have been qualifying on horse players and horse tourneys online. And there's so many pick and pray contests, right? So people are ingrained in that type of strategy. Let me make my picks in advance, and then they're locked in, right? And is that a true sense of handicapping? But it is, yeah, because you can't change them because you're down $50 going to the last two races, right? So I think a lot of people have been ingrained into that kind of, you know, play.
In a lot of ways, your first inclination is probably your best inclination.
That's the thing.
So if you don't change your mind,
as horse players, have we looked at a horse, like two horses, and then going up to the window, we're like, change our minds, not because of odds, because something in our head, and then you go back, and the original horse wins and pays $18, and you're like, I'm an idiot. I am an absolute fool. You know, so.
$50 range between the top 10, 251 up to 301, and then looking backwards into the remaining 68 players, looking all the way back, here's 50th, 198.40. So about $50 top to bottom, 1 through 10, and then 11 to 50 is another $50. So if people didn't jump on this one, there's only 1, 2, 3, 4, there's 7 races left.
That's it.
Well, and this is where some games can get played, too, is you may think, I'm not going to, there's no chance, I don't like any of these bombs. But I love these two, like these 3 2-to-1s. You may be able to say, hey, I'm in 15th place. I can get up to 11th place. I can kind of sneak my way up versus playing one horse. You know, you kind of chip the way. If I'm in 75th or whatever the number is, I could get to 50th and make an extra $1,000 versus playing bombs. You know, there's different games like that get played too. So I know when I was at the final table, I did that a couple of times where last race, I don't like a bomb. I want to pick up $6, think this horse is a cinch. You know, it picked me up another $25,000. So, like, you've played those kind of games when you get this
close.
And
where you are dictates how your play is, right? Because last year, in the especially Saturday, I was right in contention. Mm-hmm. I knew most likely I'm going to make the cut. And as you're progressing on the mandatories, you feel comfortable. I love a 5-to-2 horse in a mandatory. He's going to win. That's $11. Even in an optional, if you think you love a horse and you're in that position, 12th, 15th, 20th, Chip away. My goal last year on Sunday, I was in 14th at the beginning of the day. My goal was chip away, get into that top 10, and I shot up. I reached out for a cap horse. Luckily, I was able to get that cap horse, catapulted up to first, and you know. So don't be afraid if you're in that position to take a 5-to-2, 3-to-1. If you think the horse can't lose, don't go for the 8-to-12-to-1 shot because you know. Hey, listen, a lot of people play these 8-12-to-1 shots. You don't hit, you're only getting, if the horse came in second, you're only getting, you know, $8, but you're getting more if the horse you love, you think they can't lose, it wins the race.
You know, a friend of mine had a phrase for exactly what you're talking about. Louis Filoso always tells me, take the points. Take the points. Don't leave the points
on
the table.
That's why the stuff with the field goal, the going for the extra 2-point conversion so many times is frustrating. Too early in the game. The San Diego coach is the worst. They're going for it. Take the
points.
But again, if you're on the cut, you're 2 races left yesterday, and you're $30 off the cut line. You got to go what you need rather than what you want. So it depends 100%. On where you are in the in the contest.
Aqueduct 5th and 6th, Fairgrounds 2nd and 3rd, Gulfstream a minute to post the 6th and the 7th, the 7th at Laurel, and Laurel has been very productive today. And as I said at the table with you guys earlier, Dan, it doesn't seem like people spend enough time looking at Laurel.
I'm a big Charlestown fan,
so
a lot of Charlestown horses. So this is kind of the Charleston East. I'm not even sure what direction it is from Charlestown, but a lot of Charlestown shippers are in today. Unfortunately, not the ones that I've been following. But yeah, it's there's not a ton of money in the pools, which helps. So those favorites seem to get bet a little harder, and there's definitely been some value.
Well, this is the last.
Hey, I got a cap horse at Laurel on semifinal last year.
How about that? Then you've got we'll have the first at Santa Anita only, and the 7th at Tampa. 19 minutes the 17th at Tampa. It's a 10 horse field, so I'm sure some people are diving through there. And actually, there's a 6-to-5 favorite, then a 4-to-1, and a 6-to-1. So from there, it's all double digits. I'm imagining that Tampa is going to be a attractive target for people, and I'm just pulling this race up out of curiosity. You're looking at a... It's a dirt race.
You got a 6-5 shot as the 5 horse. Other than that, you got some nice, inviting, tempting prices up there.
Exactly. At Laurel, the race at Laurel. Let's take a look here, see what kind of a group this is. 7 minutes to post at that indoor paddock at Laurel. This is a mile and a 16th allowance group, so some class to this. And it's funny. Here's a look at that. Here's a board: 6-1, 5-1, 5-1, 6-1, 6-5, 9-1. So basically, if the 6-5 doesn't win, you're looking at
$20,
$20 everywhere. Yeah. Now 7-5 on that favorite. That's Frightland. This is Brittany Russell with Heavy on Toledo, a Munnings gelding. That at Aqueduct, you're 8 minutes to the fifth. There'll be the fifth and the sixth. You got to go ahead. There we go.
It's been a pleasure,
DP.
I'll see you guys next year,
without fail.
I appreciate it.
Are we going to see you this summer? You coming to Saratoga?
No, it's a little difficult to get to Saratoga, but I'll be at Del Mar. If you're going to be, are you making it Del Mar this summer?
I don't know yet.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. We
maybe
went 2 years ago.
Maybe Kentucky at some point this summer. All right. We'll see. But yeah, we'll see you soon. I appreciate it.
Dan Kovaleski, everybody.
Pleasure meeting you.
A long-term.
You. Good luck to you.
A long-term Derby trailer.
And I'm going to be right behind him, Steve. Thank you so much.
Always
I had
great.
A scratch. I wanted a consolation, probably go out ahead. Of it, but I might have a shot for 20th. Then $1,000 is $1,000.
Right? Exactly
Rich,
right.
Thank you so much.
Go get him, Dave.
We'll see you around at the dinner tonight.
You got it. Right. Dave Harrison, everybody, last year's champion, and a valiant effort. It's one of the toughest things to do, even getting back into getting back into the semifinal. Is a challenge. Gulfstream, you got an even money favorite at Gulfstream. Let's take a look at what's happening here. This will be the, so there, actually there will be a seventh, the seventh will count yet. Even money for an Armando de la Cerda runner with Joel. Let's listen in here as you can hear they're in the gate, and let's see what we got.
And they're off from the rail. JP Hellish comes out firing. Advanced Cash moves to take second from Bad Bad Bobby and Uncle Armando. They're a length and a half in front of the Mar, who's racing together with Super Cohiba, and the trailer is back chat. JP Hellish, you went too fast. Eighth of a mile to go. Super Cohiba. Emma Jane still hard at work, but now he's clear. Second is Back Chat. Uncle Armando into third. Super Cohiba is in front. Back Chat is second. Uncle Armando is third. Advanced Cash is fourth in 1:42.1.
Super Cohiba in here, and this is a 6-1 winner, which will satisfy, I imagine, a few players. Nothing wrong with that. And happy to also welcome Tom Rooney. Tom, do you want the headset? Do you mind? Excellent. a pleasure to have Tom Rooney join us, and we convene in all the most interesting places on the movable feast that is Thoroughbred Racing. Welcome, Tom Rooney.
Thanks for having me back, Steve. I think last time was Saratoga. Maybe something in between there.
There had to be something. Did we symposium?
Maybe. No, I didn't talk to you this year.
No?
I talked to you last year at symposium.
It's been that long?
Yeah. Saratoga, August.
Unbelievable. All right. I see you, though.
Yeah.
I do see you plenty of places.
I saw you at the Eclipse Awards.
That's right.
The symposium. I saw, you know, I see you everywhere. You're everywhere.
The big important question, did those shrimp, did the raw bar, did we put the vet into the raw bar?
I tried single-handedly just because I felt so bad about all that. They had to take it away when we went inside, so I'm just like scarfing down all these shrimp.
You and I were scooping them up.
Hey, lesson learned. Now we know. When people are drinking before an event like that, they're not going to sit there and eat
well,
raw fish and shellfish and shrimp.
There was a. I think I put a picture up actually from Eclipse Night, and I put that up, and they had the ice sculpture.
Right.
Do you do any ice sculpting?
Always wanted to.
With the chainsaw. Like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day.
Right.
I just realized I also saw you at Oaklawn.
Yeah. Yep.
On that fun, it wasn't
Rebel.
Wasn't a beautiful day, but
yeah.
Rebel Day.
Yeah.
Where else have you been? They got you on the march.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the goal. We're going to be at obviously DC as much as we can now with the new office when Congress is in session, and but we're going to the Louisiana Derby, Florida Derby. Obviously, the Kentucky Derby will be up there all week in Louisville, and you know, on to the Preakness. I want to do the Haskell again. That was a great experience at Monmouth.
It's always great.
And then obviously back up at Saratoga. But you know, and then we're gonna, the Breeders' Cup is in California again.
Santa Anita.
So, and then Del Mar the next year. So you know, it's a full calendar, but. You know, I think it's important for me to be everywhere as much as I can.
Some thoughts about if it's been that long, 6-7 months, give us another pulse take on the job and what you know, what has been, as president and CEO of the NTRA, what has been either surprising to you or more of a challenge, and what opportunities have you recognized and are eager to attack?
The good news is that events like this do very well, and our team runs a first-class operation when it comes to this Horse Players Championship. This is, I think, the biggest one we've ever had, and so, you know, we're growing, and we have success with the things that we already do. You know, with a lot of the other trade association things we're involved in, like John Deere, we do very well. So it enables us to have options, like having a nicer Eclipse Awards or having the office in D.C. to be able to be up there and introduce myself. So mostly what I've done since August, when I talked to you, we opened the office there. We've gone around to a lot of the senators and members in the new Congress. We're a divided government again, so it makes it more difficult for us to have legislative successes, but we got to try to pick our battles for things that we know that are probably going to get to the president's desk, like a farm bill, which only comes up every 5 years. So we're going to try to play in that with some of our depreciation stuff that's hugely important at our sales, Keeneland, Fasig, Tipton, the people that are buying those horses. We've had a lot of success, and we've been very fortunate over the last few years, mostly because of the way the tax law is written. And, you know, we can't go backwards on that. So we're going to be working on that. As you know, heist has been a huge issue this year. There was a play in the lame duck session to amend the language to try to appease the court's concerns for why it was not constitutional. We've had one court echo.
You're good.
Should I keep talking?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That was a good one.
Laurel has been exciting, actually. That's the last race that they'll use from Laurel. And let's see the replay, because it did look like the two horse that was barreling up the inside, I think, is going to get the nod here, 5-2. Rusty's G550 is going to nail. I've been explaining that this TV view, it's like the old Yankee Stadium, right? At Forbes Field, you must have gone to some Forbes Field games.
Yeah.
You got the obstructed view, so I've got to like crane my neck around the post. This was some rally. Johan Rosado is going to, I think, get up with the two. And they're giving you the ultra slow-mo. Nose is down.
I don't know, Steve.
Wow, this is dead tight. Dead tight.
He looked like he's in front, but the other five's nose went down right at the wire.
That's the 4-5 favorite, and I don't know how many people are playing 5-2s at this point. So the Laurel races are done with that, all right? And there is the fifth coming up here at Aqueduct. And there will be one more after the fifth. The sixth is the last from the Big A. Let's keep an eye on this group. It is a group of eight, actually, so let's look for some prices. As we talk to the president and CEO of the NTRA, Tom Rooney, joining us. And this is a group that's going to go a mile at the Big A. And it was the two. Rusty's G550 gets up. And so if somebody was just looking to inch forward,
right,
because
that was a chance, yep.
We're at a point in the game theory, game plan, where when you look at the earnings, when you look at what people make, if you're 50th and you can get to 30th at
right.
this point, and you realize you're not going to make the final table, seemingly, then every ratchet you can move up is going to be, here, I'll show
a lot more money.
Absolutely. Look at the earnings. Like, for instance, if you were sitting 55th, you were going to get $14,350. If you can get up to 30th, there's another $3,000.
Right.
So people are doing that. There's also people that will be happy to, you know, you can get up to even into the teens, and suddenly it's 17, 20,000, 30,000. After the top 10, 50, 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 19, 18, and then it trickles down from there. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
We're watching here as a 6-5 favorite is being confronted by a 5-2.
Yeah.
A little further back is a 7-2 that is trying to make up some late ground, but Preposterous is going to be a 5-2 winner here at the Big A. And so that will leave us with the sixth race, which is another mile group, and it's a group of eight. So we'll watch for the Aqueduct. We'll take the last races from each of the venues. When it comes to the money, Tom, what has been, you've come into it obviously with a long established, two-decade
right.
Of experience, and you rely on the Players Committee and on Keith and Michelle and Holly and their experience. There's a couple of schools of thought. Some people feel like we should do everything we can to make the champion a $1 million winner.
Right.
And that we're spreading the icing too far on the sheet game.
Right. The one luxury I've had over the last year is to be the new guy and play that devil's advocate game. Like, why don't we have a $1 million winner? And make this sort of like a big splash with the larger audience. But then when you get into the people that are really in this room, those two races right there, as you alluded to, are great examples where the favorite lost. But it's probably, the second favorite came in first. So you got a couple guys looking at that sheet that you were just talking about and trying to get and climb the ladder so they can win more money. So I think it's much more advantageous for the horse players to go with the way that we do things now, to be able to move up that sheet and make more money versus the big splash of saying, hey, if you win it all, you get $1 million. I really wanted it to be a $1 million winner. And, you know, was sort of talked out of it by the people that have done it for a long time and the people in this room that this is more important for everybody to want to come back, especially like at this point of the last day, where there's a lot of people in this room still fighting for something that, you know, they're not going to make the final table, but they're still very much got their nose in the program, trying to move up that chart. But I hear you. I mean, I ask the same questions. And, you know, I think that in the end, we want this tournament to be the best tournament for the horse players by and large. And I've heard people say, well, it's not worth it for me to go out there and win $10,000. Like, well, you know, I don't get that. But
no,
you know,
especially because we have people who, on the flip side, come out here. We just talked to our friend Dan Kovaleski, and he came out. Brian Troop, the 2010 winner, he didn't qualify. Mm-hmm. There's no green jacket. There's no 10-year right. exemptions here. You get the first year exempt. He came out on kind of a lark, essentially, and played in the last chance, first chance. And,
right.
and here he is. You know, he's got beat, but he's happy to be with a lot of, you know, he's
right.
a Canadian. He's got all kinds of friends down,
yeah.
You know, everybody that's in from Toronto. You hear Frank Miramati in the background, and that means it's the one race we're going to take from Santa Anita. It is the first. It's the opener, and it is a nine-horse field. You got a 4-5 favorite. The Maltese Falcon, actually, is your 4-5 favorite. I think you've got to look over. It's over here, Tom. Here we go. It's over in the middle
yeah.
board. Let's Maltese Falcon early 4-5 at the back of the pack. So let's see. Here we go.
Turf looks good out there. Getting a lot of rain.
Behind Raji at the rail comes Precision Strike, who's racing about 15 lengths off the pace. Stonks is in the clear just outside of him. Another length and a half to Surf Affair, and Maltese Falcon is at the back. They run past the half-mile pole with Phosphorescence, the leader. Just a neck, though, with Storm the Night pressing second. Ziwatanejo, two off the pace in third. Followed by Calm Sea, Raji, and Stonks. Down on the inside, Precision Strike. Maltese Falcon is trying to move up a little. And on the outside of him comes Surf Affair. They're heading toward the quarter pole. Phosphorescence narrowly. Storm the Night is in second. Then Calm Sea angling out. On the far outside, Stonks goes like seven wide into the stretch. In the meantime, Precision Strike is looking for room down at the rail. Final eighth of a mile. Calm Sea, Phosphorescence are head and head. Phosphorescence not done. Fighting back on the inside of Calm Sea. It's Phosphorescence, resilient, and Phosphorescence proves best. Turning away all challenges. A long neck over Calm Sea.
That's a 3-1 winner, so about an $8 or $9. That might help somebody.
In this race at Tampa coming up, I have an interesting horse in that. In the seventh race in that at 6 furlongs.
This is the last of the Tampa races.
This horse got beat 22 lengths last time in a 10. Not a starter. Anyways, he looks like he's got speed. He's a horse that ran at Finger Lakes, and he's a New York bred. He's shown speed in all his life in that. I find that horses that race at Tampa the first time likely need a start or two, and
sure.
at least one start. This horse is coming from Finger Lakes, so in other words, he's been racing on deeper type tracks and that and so on. He's a good price. They got the former Bug Girl on, Maddie Rowland, and that. Ferraro is training him. He's likely got as good a buyer in the race as anybody in that. As I say, he come out of 10, which they're likely protecting him there. Today's, I would think, has to be a go day in that.
I like it.
The girl rides at 17% for this trainer, so
well,
it's just an interesting play. He keeps bumping up in that.
Nice.
I I lost my last play I gave on the air and that, and fortunately for the public, anybody listening in that, I've bet two other horses since then, and it's just as well you didn't know who they were.
There we go. All right, we're gonna. You've been the back half of the day is when you get hot. Yeah. That's all right. Forward Motion is the horse that Brian is talking about. The 3 in the 7th at Tampa, and they are moving back behind the gate. This will be the last race from Tampa. We're done with Santa Anita. We're done with Laurel. Laurel was very productive. I think we'll hear some stories about that. Gulfstream has got 6 minutes to post for the 7th race. That's the last one there. And we've got one at Aqueduct. 19 minutes will be the last race of the semifinal. In terms of the board, as we talk to Tom Rooney, the president and CEO, we have a new leader in Paul Kallia. Paul Kallia, 3.19.90, finally overhauls Francis Bustani. Doc Bustani, static at 3.01.50. Down below, there really hasn't been much other movement. We already told you about Joe Paese getting in, and Tom, this is the family that owns Home Run Inn Pizza in Chicago. So
nice.
this could be good for horse players everywhere if we can get Joe Paese into the winner's circle.
Steve Wells is still sitting.
He's got two, so he
hasn't made much of a move, but he's made a movement. He had 239, I think.
Exactly. He's had a couple.
What price is he sitting in?
Fifth.
Are they
still unchanged?
Are they still both tickets playing the same horses?
Yes. Yeah. Which is a pretty good discipline. I mean, you'd think he'd hedge a little bit, but he wants the two spots in the final table.
And it feels like that. We discussed this with Paul Sherman, who's one of the strongest, strategists of anybody in the contest world, and this is a departure to play the two tickets together and not break them apart
right.
Earlier.
He's gone further than me. I've always said that I've never had two tickets in this tournament and that, but I've always said that if I ever had two tickets in that in the tournament, the first day I'd likely play everything the same in that, because the main thing is doing them the same in that is because the last thing you want to fry your mind in that is you get a cap horse on one ticket, and then you get, even if it's not a cap horse,
but
say a good horse on another ticket,
yep.
And you don't play it on your good ticket, it fries your brain in that right off the hop.
Exactly right.
They're just ready to go at Tampa, I see, in that. Maybe I can get lucky for a change.
All right, not for a change. You had four, you were 4 for 6, so you're 4 for 7 going into this 8th one. Tom Rooney is with us from the NTRA, talking broad issues with Tom.
Quick little nugget, Steve, before this starts. Yeah. Francis Bustiani's cousin I served with in Congress, Charles,
was very
Louisiana.
Helpful.
He's very helpful with people that bet on horses.
Helped us with the withholding change.
That's right. I'm sure he's talking to Francis.
We will listen in to the last year from Tampa. As soon as I get Jason up on the screen, there we go. The horse that Brian likes, 12-1. 2-1 favorite is Ridgepoint, Mario Lopez. There's a 9-2 shot, Bam Bam Blue. This is Desperate Hours for some players.
They're in the gate.
Here we go.
They're in the gate. And the race is on. High money, the first to break from the gate. Kevin Whitty is showing good early speed. Between horses comes Astro Pony down on the inside. Forward Motion, Ridgepoint. Blaine Bishop also there, 6 up right across the course here in the early going as Bam Bam Blue came away 7th. 3 at the back, Loud and Proud, No Commission, and Gunman, but only about 7 lengths cover them as they go up the back stretch. Up from the far outside, it's I'm Money. Down toward the inside is Forward Motion between the horses, Kevin Whitty, those 3 across the tracks. They're 2 clear. Vast for Bodie, Blaine Bishop, they race 4th and 5th. 2.5 more after that to Bam Bam Blue. Then comes Loud and Proud in the red colors. On the outside, Teal Cap. No Commission is 3rd last. Then comes Gunman, and dropping way out of it there was Ridgepoint. 21 and 3 for the opening quarter mile is up front. Forward Motion leads him to the top of the stretch. Forward Motion now a length and a half in front. Ask for Bodie, the favorite, starting to warm up on the outside. And here comes Ask for Bodie after Forward Motion as they turn to the top of the stretch. Just in behind them, I'm Money, Kevin Whitty, Blaine Bishop trying to run on with Bam Bam Blue. But Ask for Bodie takes over. Sammy Camacho and Ask for Bodie, the leaders, as they come to the 16th pole. Two more back to Forward Motion. Late run from Gunman down on the inside is starting to rally up nicely. But inside the final 16th, Ask for Bodie well in command. Ask for Bodie at 6-5. They'll win it by 4.5 in the end. Forward Motion was second, third, Kevin Whitty, and fourth, Gunman.
Well, this won't help anybody that much, but a very good job by Brian again. Nice work by Brian Troop to identify Forward Motion at 12-1. Ran very, very well.
The horse ran well in that. There's not much you can do in a 6-5 get you in that.
No.
I don't play 6-5s.
No, exactly. And at this point in the contest.
Fortunately, I told Richard about the horse, and he's smart enough to bet at win place. I only bet to win, of course, like a dummy. See, that's why his book fits me.
We got a minute to post at Gulfstream. Let's quickly glance at this group and get this set up. This is the last. 28th place, 68. This is the last at Gulfstream. And after this race, there will only be the Aqueduct 6th. And you have an even money shot in New York. Let's look at Gulfstream, a 3-2 favorite in here. In this seventh, and that's Charmed. Jose D'Angelo again. He had a favorite a little earlier. 3-2. This is a group that's going 5.5 on the all weather. So a Tapita. Well, and Rich Eng is beating Tom Rooney, and
this book was written for me.
First edition
for dummies.
Certainly sold enough.
Here, Rich.
I was just telling Tom that
I wrote a first edition 20 years ago. They came back and we sold enough books where they said they'd like a second edition, and here we are. And to me, this is a real positive for the sport of horse racing that they do want a second edition. And this has been out since Christmas, so
you have it on audio?
Not on audio. It's available on Amazon.com.
Yeah. All right. I'll pick it up.
Yeah.
I have 20 acres out near Payson Park in Indiantown, Florida. I mow it myself. It's like my therapy. And I'm on the tractor. I have these noise, like headphones like this. But I go through books like so fast now because just going back and forth in these pastures.
Oh, okay.
So all the books I was supposed to read in high school and college, I'm actually getting through.
You're catching up.
Yeah, right. I'm like, man, that was a great book.
That was fantastic.
I only read the Cliff Notes before.
We are never too old to learn.
Right.
We're old dogs, but we're learning.
With these two races left, Paul Kallia continues to cash tickets, now at 326.70. And Francis has not had a horse move forward for him. It's 301.50. Gary Fenton, actually...
In California.
Yeah, Gary is not the two, by the way, for Brian Troop, Forest Survivor, the Jorge Delgado runner, looks like second off the claim. The seven, or the two in the seventh for Brian, he's running up to make a play. The rest of this leaderboard includes Stephen Wells, who right now looks fairly secure. Unless some things get crazy, it feels like Stephen Wells will have both of these tickets. And Rich, it feels like he's been very conservative, basically trying to just maintain his spot to get both tickets into the final table. It'll be fun to talk to him about his strategy. Joe Paese, back to Joe, had fallen out of the top 10 after marauding in. Now cashed something, not sizable, but he got a place price, so he is back in the top 10, sitting at 7th. Paul Kallia has his second entry now, has hit into the top 10. So we may have as few as 8 players get to the final table, two of them potentially with two tickets.
That would be a remarkable story if two players have two entries making it into the top 10.
Unbelievable.
And you know, the key about doing well in day one and obviously doing well in day two, you do not have to change your strategy. And if you can stay the course with, you know, your game plan, it's obviously much better for you to try to make this final table.
Edward Dyke has gotten back into the top 10, 262.40, and Joe Scagno, a veteran, good player, Joe Scagno with a big shot. He is at 258.80. The screen's about to change. I'm going to let it change, and we'll see how many are within, seemingly within reach, the 258.80 to get to the final table with the 7th at Gulfstream and the 6th at Aqueduct to run to determine the final table, as well as really all the standings. George Novick just outside. He's 20 cents behind Joe Scagno. Looking into the 30s, Paul Sherman is at 226.50. So from 11 down to 30, there is a spread of 20, make it $32. People are going to be reaching for 12 to 1 shots.
So in this situation, if you're trying to make money, if you're 30th, are you betting the long shot
they're
to
still,
win?
They're, or
are
still you still they're still trying to get to the final table.
If I'm 30th, I'm still trying. Even if I don't like a horse, I'm trying to get in the final 10 of that. I'm not like the amount of money from 30th to 11th isn't enough that you wouldn't want to get
chance.
Into the final table and so on.
You know, Brian, at some point, when you only have a bullet or two, you have to handicap the tote board, basically, because you know what you need. You know your target.
I often, if I'm out of it and I need a cap horse in a race and that, I just, the only thing I look at in the race is the three or four 20-to-1 shots and take the one that I like the best in that. That's all you can do. Back to my buddy Joe Scagno and that. He's a real good friend of mine. He was last in the final, he was in the final 10 on the year 2015.
That's right. That's right.
That I was in there. Actually, when we came in, I finished ninth at the end of today, and he finished 10th. And he played a little more conservative than me, and he moved up to, I think, to 5th or 6th in that. Of course, Mike Frozo and myself that were in there, we were playing longer shots, and we finished 9th and 10th.
Is the 23rd and 20th place total in the consolation tournament. 113.20 leads.
Still on the
tournament.
March to the gate at Gulfstream, and New York now 7 minutes to post. That even money favorite continues to hold steady. Running down this Gulfstream group, Uncle B, 7-2. Miguel Vasquez for Laura Cazares. That Forest Survivor that Brian likes.
I actually like the one likely better, but I'm taking the price.
There you go. 9-1 this, on
Forest And I'll
Survivor.
Tell you something. When I look at the horse out in the track, one looks like he's loaded for bear. The one looks, you know, really nice on the track. And that.
Very good.
He looks like he wants, she wants, the horse wants to go on that.
54-1 on the 3. Be by the Sea, Marcial Navarro, Edgar Perez. Cotton 10-1, Martin Drexler with Jose Ortiz, the 4, the 5 Super Success, Fernando Abreu with Tyler Gaffleone, 9-2 off the 9-2 morning line. Charmed, another Jose D'Angelo runner. Actually, I said Jose D'Angelo. Forest Survivor is actually Jose Delgado, not D'Angelo. D'Angelo's got Charmed, the 9-5 favorite. Kathleen O'Connell, who became the winningest female trainer in the game's history earlier today. She's got Hard Count, 12-1 with Paco Lopez, powerfully built. Jack Abrams and Lionel Reyes, 9-2. That horse is taking money. And Mary Epler, a top-notch female trainer in her own right, the big mare, with Jorge Ruiz, 37-1. Psychedelic Shack, Field of Nine, absolutely just taking their sweet time getting to this gate. It's been 0 minutes to post for about 3 minutes.
The Gulfstream and that.
Yeah.
The Uncle B horse and that that I actually like has a race since the 8th of December. The horse is a 9-year-old. I find that older horses like that, once you're above seven, that it might take you a race that you need in that. The two horse has run with Uncle B before, and they finished noses apart. So that's why I went. I bet the Uncle B horse instead of, plus Louis Saez is on the two horse, so.
Oaklawn and Gulfstream are going off at the same time.
You can fix that, Tom. It's up
that,
to you.
That drives me absolutely crazy. Absolutely nuts. I don't get it.
We could talk about that. Let's listen in to Peter Aiello. Here we go. Penultimate race.
Cotton going up. Psychedelic Shack. And the late pick four. They're Remigate. And they're off. Picture perfect beginning. From the rail, Uncle B comes out firing and looks for the early lead. Moving up on the outside, here's speed from Charmed. Wider out in Psychedelic Shack. Trying to split horses as Forest Survivor as they make their way to the half-mile point. Psychedelic Shack is cleared and leads by a length and a half. Uncle B second. From between horses, Forest Survivor. Charmed is three wide. Hard Count is four wide. Behind the speed, Super Success, then Powerfully Built. Inside to B by the Sea. And Cotton is last of all as they make their way to the final three furlongs. Psychedelic Shack has the lead. Psychedelic Shack leads now by a length and a half. Uncle B looking for room. Charmed is next. Hard Count winding up. Super Success far outside. That's Powerfully Built. They make their way a quarter of a mile from home. They're getting to the leader. Uncle B gets through at the rail. Over the top. Hard Count. Charmed is next. Super Success off a good trip and down the center. Powerfully Built. Who do you like here? Powerfully Built. Jeez. On the far outside. Super Success from between. Super Success and Powerfully Built. Powerfully Built shifting ground and taking over. Powerfully Built wins. Super Success clings to the place. Cotton is third. Charmed is fourth. Then Hard Count, 102 and 4.
9-2 could be very valuable for some players that were lurking. That's more than enough, probably about $15 when we get the official numbers. And we're going to spin right into the sixth race at Aqueduct. Again, even money favorite, as mentioned, that has basically held steady from the moment the board came to the sixth race. Just looking here, actually 6-5 on this last flat. This is Rudy Rodriguez, Proven Hope, with Manny Franco, who has been just spectacular at Aqueduct. The winner here, though, 9-2 at Gulfstream. So the last race of the semifinal. We'll wait until we go official, probably have a chance to glance at the board. As mentioned, the longtime leader, Dr. Francis Bustani, overtaken by Paul Kalia, who is sitting first and eighth right now.
The unofficial top 10.
326.70 leads the NHC semifinal right now. Dr. Bustani at 301, so $25 behind. So not only is Paul Kalia overtaken Dr. Bustani, but he's actually positioning himself beautifully into the final table. He owns a $36 lead over third. He owns a $50 lead over fourth. $60 lead over Stephen Wells with those two entries. So Paul Kalia, if he cashes, he's got one more optional, and if he cashes again, he's going to have a very, very strong position starting the final table.
Is the Doc still second?
He's still second.
Yeah. How close are the next ones to him?
There's been no movement, no change, virtually no change. It is post time in New York, and awaiting prices, as Brian Skirka just said, awaiting the prices. Let me make sure we're ready to listen in to Chris Griffin at the Big A
the sixth race.
Dinner will begin at 5:30. Cocktails.
There we go.
Cocktails start at 5:30.
Tom Rudy, kind enough to join us, dinner president and CEO of the NTRA. And Tom, after this race, we'll probably take a two-hour break.
Yep.
We'll get to the top of the hour.
Nap.
Well, we get a break. We're going to take the break, but we'll come immediately back. And I do want to get back to some of the issues that we were talking about. And particularly, and I'll plant the seed, the still not official at Gulfstream. You mentioned something I thought important, which is successes that aren't the type that make headlines. And you know, the NTRA has had to suffer through a lot of unfair criticisms over the years. And part of the NTRA's challenge has been underwhelming support from other industry organs and racetracks in a lot of cases. There was a very rough period where the NTRA had lost support among racetrack organizations and funding. That created certain kinds of pressures, and then in particular when the industry, when they had to react to certain things in the industry, they were doing it on a shoestring. It seems like the pendulum has swung back in the other direction. I want you to address that a little bit,
okay.
And also how we educate and make people understand in the industry how many behind the scenes, you know, those sort of quiet wins. That just don't necessarily, I mean, it's taken a lot, it took a tremendous amount to get the withholding rule change.
Right.
And there was an initial hurrah. Now, in some places I see, oh, it didn't impact the handle like they said it would. It's like you can't satisfy certain members of observers of the industry. And I think it's very unfair, but I mean, there's a lot of small things that have. I discussed this with Alex Waldrop for years.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of small victories that the public should know more about. 1140 and 580 for Powerfully Built. So you're looking at 1720 added to Coffers. They're in the gate in New York, and we will pull this all together and put a bow on your top 10, maybe your top 8, because there's two players that are holding pairs of aces heading to the final table. But let's listen in, and Chris Griffith calls the last race of the semifinal.
Awkwardly, it broke inward there as towards the tail end of the field is now being encouraged to move forward. But the leader is Let Freedom Spring. It's Let Freedom Spring, and in between horses comes Storm and D out wider. There's Downtown Connector, and Downtown Connector is in the clear. We'll cross over as they come out of the chute. It's Downtown Connector now who's up by a neck. Mile pressure to the inside here. Let Freedom Spring. They're 1-2. Taking off the paces, Storm and D and Warrior Richard after the start in the orange silks is now progressing with steady progress. They're 4th and 5th. Out wider, that's Proven Hope in the yellow silks towards the tail end of the field. Old Point is second to last, and the trailer, Lefty's War, Downtown Connector at a huge number. It's Downtown Connector who is now up by 2-3 lengths here as they approach a half mile left to go when 23.43 for that opening quarter mile. Downtown Connector, and Jamie Torres is going to try and take him all the way. Here comes Let Freedom Spring, who's trying to re-rally, is to the inside here of Stormandy. Also running on is Proven Hope, and Proven Hope is progressing a touch wide as they're well into that turn. 46.67 for that half mile time. The long shot is still there. Downtown Connector, another long shot. Let Freedom Spring is within range, and here comes the run from Proven Hope. Old Point is starting to launch a rally from the back end of the field as they reach the top of the stretch. Downtown Connector is still there. It's Downtown Connector at a huge number, trying to fend off the favorite Proven Hope, who's rolling down the center of the racetrack, a furlong left to go. Old Point is on the grandstand side. Can Downtown Connector get there? Is gutting it out towards the inside. Downtown Connector is almost home, but here comes Old Point in the final strides. Old Point, Downtown Connector. Downtown Connector connects at 40-1. Downtown Connector over a point.
Unbelievable.
Proven Hope was in there with.
Unbelievable. And Joe Costello and Paul Kusher joining us with Tom Rooney. We waited. There hasn't been a double cap horse, a $64 horse, the entire 3 days. And here it is.
Seven was really acting up in the gate. Kind of missed the break.
Yeah.
And then he was drifting out in the stretch. He's like, you know, all over the place.
Well, this...
Right on the race, right on the race after the semifinals ends, right?
No, that was... The six was part of it.
Was it?
No, the six was... That's,
right. Yeah, yeah.
The Gulfstream race was the last race.
Yeah, the Gulfstream, there you go. Yeah. All right. We had it written down as one through six. Wow, how crazy is that? Well, the... Let's then set. I think we're set, right?
Yeah, that's the finals.
There you go. There's form. Yeah, here's your top 10. And
was the tie for 19.
Paul Kalia hit again. Paul Kalia hit again. 343.90 to the final table. He's got a $42 lead over longtime leader Doc Bustani.
Incredible.
Yeah, that's a commanding lead, you know, especially considering that I think he's got his second entry there in there too, right, Steve?
Yeah, he got the two entries, and Stephen Wells.
He does too.
He's
got
two.
Finally bet against himself.
Stephen Wells,
and
yeah.
And he finally did break up his tickets. Stephen Wells and Paul Kalia will have two tickets each, so eight players of the possible 10 at the final table.
That's amazing that it's happened twice in the same year.
Unbelievable. A remarkable. Kalia, as great as Dr. Stanny has been, Kalia has been a steady builder, and then yesterday and now today, remarkable.
And I think that JK was the only person previously to ever do that. So.
With the two tickets. And he couldn't use both tickets that first year, and then they changed the rule.
They changed the rule.
To let, if somebody had two tickets, they got to play that way.
Yeah, I think it's a good rule change because it basically rewards somebody for being able to do that.
Exactly.
Which is an amazing feat in itself. You know, and but I wanted to say a quick thank you to both of you, Tom and Steve, for all you do for the sport. And, you know, it makes it great for the rest of us and who really enjoy playing this stuff.
Absolutely.
You're very kind. Joe Costello, who made your big score, came BCBC.
No. I was last year's tour winner.
There you go.
This year's nobody.
the tour. You know, the tour is a unique. No tour repeat winners either. I mean, that's a tough repeat. Right?
I tried, Steve. I tried my best. So they kicked my rear this year.
it's a challenge. And Paul, you seemed yesterday particularly. I mean, you had a very steady on the wheel.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a grind, you know, and I'm a big, big bias player, and then today there just wasn't any horses that were against a bias at any of the tracks that, you know, I really like, so it was tough sledding for me today.
You ended up 21st.
Yeah.
21st, so. Which is going to bring you home 18,000?
Somewhere in there.
21st is
17.
17,700. Not a bad payday.
No.
Do you cash some tickets along the way as well? Do you play some cash money too?
I did something for the first time ever. I did not make one cash bet.
Wow.
Because the last couple of times, well, the first year I just was totally overwhelmed. The second year I had two entries and I'd gone both to the pay line. Then last year, I started betting right out of the chute, and that was more important than the NHC. So I said, this year, I'm going to just try to concentrate as long as I'm involved. And I was pretty much involved the whole way.
Right.
So now it's time for the San Anita late pick five.
Now you go. There you go. And Joe, how about you? How did your days go?
Just not real well. You know, I actually handicapped, I think, rather well for Thursday for the first chance, last chance. But it split all my entries, you know, finished in the top 10% on all the entries, but couldn't connect the prices on the same one that I needed. And I think, you know, just a little bit, you know, I think this is my seventh time here.
Nice.
But, you know, it really can grind you down, especially when you're handicapping manually with a piece of paper and a pencil like I do. You know, you really takes a lot of study time to go through the races, and when you're piling seven tracks 3 days in a row, you can get a little bit behind sometimes, and you know, I think it got a little bit of the better of me this time.
But he was close, though, because on the Asmussen horse that on Friday, it was like 17, 18 to 1.
Yeah, at Oakland.
I love that horse. He ran okay on the dirt at Churchill. Then he came back and won as a first-time gelding. Well, the next time out, he chased a wicked pace, which it was a huge off-the-pace night at Turfway Park. If you were anywhere near the pace, you were dead. And he asked me about the horse, and yeah. I tried to talk him onto it without talking him onto it. He asked me a couple of questions about the horse, and he didn't know I was on the horse. But I think he came really close to taking that one, which may have changed the whole thing. But
I can tell you, I can give you a little comedy for the show, Steve. So I'm between two horses, the 3 and the 6, the Asmussen and another horse, I can't remember the trainer, who was bred out of Caressing, a Grade 1 winning dam.
Yeah.
So I go to ask winner. Paul. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I go to ask Paul, and I said, Paul, I said, Asmussen looks like he has his kid on this horse. You know, what do you think of that? And he's saying some positive comments about him and everything, and I'm like, and of course, you know, so I'm like, okay, Paul likes the horse, so I should play the horse. Well, of course, I don't listen to him, and I decide to double barrel the other horse. You know, go figure. And then here comes the Asmussen horse rolling through the lane. And I'm sitting there thinking, gee, I thought Steve was just doing his son a favor. Well, I guess he was doing him a really big one.
No, he's ridden a lot for Steve at Oaklawn, yeah, and with mixed results, and it is a tough decision because Santana's back in the good graces of the barn, and he's getting live calls again. And then on big Saturdays at Oaklawn, you got some of the other jocks that they use, like Rosario. So there's a lot of musical jocks going on when it comes to the Asmussen barn.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I think that earned my respect. So I'm going to be looking for that combo again, Steve and his son.
I'll say this. Oaklawn, I'm from Shreveport, Louisiana, so it's about a 2.5-hour drive to Oaklawn. I love Oaklawn, but that is a tricky, tricky track. And there's a reason Santana is just so dominant at it. He's like a Martin Bedrosian at the old Fairplex. It's a tricky track to ride. So Asmussen's son, it's not the easiest track to start riding in full fields against. And I think you learn a lot about riding there because there's a lot, the turns are tighter into that first turn. And, you know, if you look at post 8 through 12 combined at Oaklawn, it's about 5% sprint route. It's just hard. It's a tricky track. So I think he's a little bit better than probably you've seen. And he'll probably even improve once they go to Kentucky or wherever Steve sends him next. I think he's got a little. I like the way he sits on the horse. I think he's going to be okay.
He's got the same problem that his father had as a jock. He's lanky. He's kind of, you know, tall and lanky. He's got to kind of fold himself into position to get on a horse.
Joseph O'Brien of American Racing.
That's a good analogy. I don't know if he's going to have the kind of success Joseph had before he outgrew the job. But Well, any thoughts, any key learnings to take home from your 2023 experience, Joe Costello?
You know, I think for me, it's just you really have to be prepped ahead of time as much as you can. And most of the guys that have been here a lot know that. And I think I just got a little bit behind the eight ball, and that didn't help. But at the end of the day, I think I played what I like. I played the same angles that I used to win the tour 2 years ago. And this time they just chips just didn't fall where they may.
They got to run. They got to run for you.
Yeah, I mean, we talked. I mean, I play Pedigree. Caressing's a Breeders' Cup winner. I'm going to play that horse 9 times out of 10. It just didn't work out this time going around.
There you go. Paul, how about you?
I think it's, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, for me, it's not so much a game plan. It's more of like having the cars prepared. Like, I really don't do any handicapping until I get here, but I like to have all my form marked. I want to know all the condition of the race, who fits the condition, who looks like they're in the right spots. And then as they go, I look for the way the tracks are playing, and then I kind of make my decisions on the fly, and more of only watch the tape on the mandatory races. And after that, like, just try to stay relaxed, because I mean the plans are going to change fast, and it just I just don't think it's hard to stick to a certain game plan when that big old leaderboard's in your face. Hmm. People are screaming. Like, it's so easy to go on tilt in this place. Leo asked me.
Leo Bogmanovich, Leo Bogmanovich.
He goes, what do you think the cut line's going to be? Put 730 people. I said, it's probably going to be around 175. He said, no, it's going to be so much higher. I said, no, Leo, 400 people are already on tilt and finished. So you have to think of it as about 300 people. Don't think of it as 700 entries.
That's true.
Because I've been there. I thought I was a great handicapper. After the first race, my first time here, I knew I had no chance that year. Like, I was done. Like, it was, you know.
Amazing.
So, anyway.
It's a great experience. It's one of the reasons we do this, because everybody listening at home and wherever they are, they find it infectious and they get the fever. You got to put a lot in, but the reward when you come here and you're among the countless friends and comrades at arms for the game. And so, well done. Just getting here is always a big part of the achievement. And, you know, got something to go home with.
Right.
I think, you know, Michelle and Holly and the crew that Tom has working, they really do themselves very nicely the way they put this together for us every year. You know, this is something that my wife and I look forward to coming to every year. We always enjoy the weekend, and sometimes it's a little bit better of a year than others, but it's always good to be here, and we really appreciate the folks that put it together.
Nicely said. Paul, Joe, thanks so much. We're going to take our first break of the afternoon, and when we come back, we will introduce what this field ends up looking like. It's a fascinating scenario with the two twin ticket successes, Paul Kalia first and fourth going into the final table, Stephen Wells seventh and ninth going into the final table, Steve Nemitz, who had been sort of lurking
up seven,
he ends up getting into the final table at 265.90, that ends up being the bottom rung. Our friend George Novick, who won the last chance, first chance, he gets in, and he had been pushed out and then came back. Congratulations to George. He's a horse owner, shared the barn at New York with us, with Gary Siaka, now with horses down in Pennsylvania with the Pharaohs, Mike and Patty. And then there's also everybody else, you know, Dave Browning and Gary Fenton. Gary Fenton really did not move much. And, of course, the two-day leader, Francis Bustani, Doc Bustani. There's your eight final table participants holding 10 tickets. An unusual circumstance. First time it's happened since the rule change. We'll come back to the event center at Horseshoe, Las Vegas. Tom Rooney with me, President and CEO of the NTRA. We'll talk a few industry issues as well. And then Scotty McKeever is going to sit in for the final table as well. Rich Eng, Brian Troop, the 2010 winner. We'll have Nick Tamaro undoubtedly sit with us a little bit. We'll try to get John Nichols in as well. John unable to forge his way with his two tickets into the top 10. But we're set now. And back for the final table. First post, 4:50 Eastern, the Oaklawn 7, if you want to start looking ahead. And we're going to handicap them, we're going to bet them, and we're going to crown a champion, $800,000. Paul Kalia, certainly in enviable position.
He looks like he's in great position. You know, he's got a lot of options what he can do with those two entries right now. He can choose to block, he can choose to chuck up the leaderboard.
Got a wrap, and we'll come back to the event center after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be